Support for WPR comes from Olbrich Botanical Gardens with Gleam, Art in a New Light, a nighttime light-based art exhibit throughout the gardens, Wednesday through Saturday evenings in September and October. More at olbrich.org.
The following program is pre-recorded.
From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for the good doc, the number to call, 800-462-7413. And along with your calls, we have some topics to talk about, Zorba.
I hope so. Well, we are. We have topics. We're going to talk about dietary salt substitutes. Often people are putting this after they have a heart attack. Is there some benefit of starting that before you have a heart attack? We'll talk a little bit about what's in many of them and what that is. And then we're going to talk about pig research and organ transplants, what we can learn from our pig friends and about what that means for organ transplant.
And our special recipe today.
Oh, very special time. You're going to love this. Spicy eggplant and tofu bowls. I know your mouth is just watering when you're thinking about that. I mean, eggplant is great, but tofu, you go over the top when you say you dream about tofu, don't you?
I'm not that crazy about eggplant either, by the way.
So it's the non-Tom recipe this week.
Those are coming up. Let's get to the phones now. 800-462-7413 is our number. It's 1-800-462-7413. Our first caller joins us from Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hello.
How can
we
help?
Hi, Dr. Zorba and Tom. Thank you for taking my question. I love the show.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
So I'm 27 years old, and I've been an RN for 6 years. In 2018, I ended up injuring my back at work, and I've been having back pain, lower back pain ever since. I kind of exacerbated the problem, I think, in the end of December from working out and doing, like, back extension exercises. Uh-huh. And since then, I've been in constant pain every day.
What was the injury that you had?
I was told that I have 4 compressed discs.
Oh, wow. Do they have any idea? Was it one injury that occurred or overuse?
Yes.
How did that happen?
Yes, sir. I was dealing with a patient that was a bariatric patient, and I was turning them on my own, and I ended up hurting myself somehow that day.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Awful.
Yeah.
So, at least awful.
So, I've been seeing a chiropractor since January.
Mm-hmm. Good choice.
And,
good choice. Anything from the chiropractic adjustments? Any relief at all?
Not really.
Mm-hmm. Never mind.
Not really. Okay. And I asked them, you know, at this point, should I consider surgery or, and they kind of told me, no, I don't need surgery, but, you know, like weight loss might help and it might be a muscle issue and not a spine issue.
Oh, there are a lot of issues. Back pain is way, 27-year-old, we're talking about way back. I mean, that's the last thing you want to do. And the reason is it may not work. I mean, it's not just that we don't want to go to surgery, which, of course, we don't want to if you can be fixed or treated effectively with a non-surgical technique, but also it may fail. So you've had chiropractic adjustments. What else? Any medicines you've taken?
I just take, like, ibuprofen or things like that. I was given some muscle relaxers, but I've never really took them.
Uh-huh. How much ibuprofen did you take when you took it?
Oh, probably too much. I was taking like 600, 800 a time, but it didn't really help, so I kind of just stopped taking those altogether.
Okay, so you took that. Did you go to physical therapy, by the way?
Yes, I did.
Uh-huh. That do anything at all?
Well, it helped somewhat along with the adjustments. I went from not being able to walk or stand for long to now I can walk short distances, but I still have pain.
Gotcha.
Dealing with activity and that kind of thing.
So where does the pain go?
It doesn't radiate. It's just in my lower back, mid back, I do have neck pain sometimes, but it doesn't like radiate to my legs or anything.
Okay, so you also you do have neck pain along with that. Okay, well, I've got some ideas. So first of all, you've got some compressed vertebrae. I'm not sure what part of that is from the injury. Or what part of that you were born with? It's very hard to say because you don't have an X-ray before that. Some people have, quote, compressed vertebrae prior to that. Chiropractic, you've tried it. It doesn't work. I wouldn't go back to it. I mean, it costs money, and the reality is if it's not going to work and it hasn't worked for a number of months, then it's not going to work. I definitely would look towards a back exercise regime that a physical therapist can give you. I would look at a few things. So first of all, I would look at yoga. It's one very important issue. Sometimes there are yoga stances that can really do something. I would look into Pilates because Pilates can be very, very good for low back pain from that point of view. So I would look at yoga and Pilates and PT to look from an exercise point of view. Second thing is your weight. How much do you weigh?
Oh, gosh. 221.
220. And how tall are you?
5'4".
So you've got to look at that weight reduction. So you want to then say, I've got to start to lose weight because that really is important. That's the second thing you want to do is you want to look towards weight reduction. It's really hard. I wish I could just say lose the weight and the weight would come up, but it doesn't work that way. But that is an important part of this. Next, I would look at some medicines to do. So first of all, I would go take Aleve twice a day. I like it better than naproxen. Double the dose in the bottle, 2 Aleve in the morning, 2 Aleve in the evening, take it for 2 months. See what it does. Not a day or two, not only when you have the pain. Use it for the anti-inflammatory dose. 2 in the morning, 2 in the evening. They're 220 milligram tablets, and that's what I do with Aleve. And then the next thing I would do is I would talk to your doctor about being on something called pregabalin or Lyrica. Now, Lyrica is a very, very good drug. We use it for chronic pain. It doesn't make you sleepy. It's now generic. 50 to 100 milligrams twice daily can really help get rid of pain in a lot of people, and I would look towards that. So I'd look towards yoga or Pilates. Once again, weight reduction, some Aleve and add to that Lyrica, and then maybe you can start to get moving better. And moving better then helps you with weight loss and moving together really work together because you've got to get this thing under control. Ultimately, in a natural way to get rid of the medicines, but the medicines can help you get to the spot that you want to get to.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Doctor. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Good luck to you. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And thank you. We appreciate the call.
You know, the issue with chronic back pain, it's got to be attacked in a variety of ways to get rid of it. In a 20-some-year-old, she was 27 years old with back pain. She really has to work on this because otherwise it becomes a lifetime ordeal. Hmm.
Zorba, dietary salt substitutes lower the risk of heart attack and stroke and death, it says here.
Well, they're actually looking at a specific salt substitute. So they're not looking at we've got a great place in Madison called Penzies. They also do mail order. They do a lot of non-salt seasonings, which are really quite good. But most of them are either plant-based or different kinds of seasonings. They have to do with chili and other things. But what they're talking about is the no-salt salts. And they're often called no salt. And what they do is they have a little or no potassium, no sodium in them, but they have potassium salt. Now, potassium salt is actually a bitter salt. If you ever tasted it, you probably never have.
I don't know. I don't think so.
You would know if you tasted. So if you just put potassium salt on your hand and you licked it, you'd go, oh, my God, who could possibly taste this? But for a lot of people that are in a no-salt diet, they actually have a sodium and potassium combination, with potassium being the primary thing that's used. And this particular study looked at the no-salt salts, which are basically a combination of sodium and mostly potassium salts, and found that it lowers blood pressure, significantly, about 5 millimeters of blood pressure on the systolic range and the diastolic range about 2 millimeters. So it's a very interesting study, but I think it sheds some light on the very important place that potassium plays in our diet. And if you look at fruits and vegetables, they're often loaded in potassium. If you look at how many Americans actually get 5 servings of fruits and vegetables, it is dismal. And for many Americans, one of their main serving of the vegetable is the potato, which is usually deep fried in the form of the French fries. But I think it really shows that potassium is an issue. So the salt substitute showed it lowered blood pressure. But it also sheds to light something else. People with high blood pressure, about 30 to 40% of the people with high blood pressure, are actually not treated to goal. In other words, they're treated and their blood pressure is not as low as it could be. And the reason is there's pushback from people and in some ways from doctors. Often as you get older, you need more than one pill for high blood pressure. Once you're over 65, you often need 2 pills. Once you're over 75, you often need 3 pills. And once you're over 85, many people actually need 4 pills. And it doesn't mean that they're having more side effects, but it means they have to take 4 medications to lower their blood pressure. Because the bottom line in this study, when they said that salt substitutes that contain potassium will decrease stroke and heart attack, it really is saying, get your blood pressure under control, and we can do a better job. And Americans have to eat more fruits and veggies with potassium. If you're going to reduce salt in your diet, look at the salt substitutes that have potassium. But if you're on blood pressure pills and you go into the doctor's office and you're not at the optimal range, which for most people is 120 or 130 over below 90, but probably closer to 80, and it's another pill that you have to take, take the other pill, because we now have enormous number of pills that are generic blood pressure pills. They're not expensive. They're often $10 pills at Walmart. They're often $4 copays. GoodRx.com will make it cheaper for you. And the answer is we've got to get our blood pressure under control by hook or by crook.
Interesting. 800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a voicemailer from Laredo, Texas.
I have a question about the benefit of taking large doses of vitamin C, particularly in a lipospheric system where you drink it with a little bit of water first thing in the morning, 1,000, 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C. Anyway, lipospheric vitamin C, is it useful? Thank you.
Well, I think vitamin C is one of the best placebos we've ever invented in our country, spearheaded by Linus Pauling, who's one of the only people, maybe he's the only person, who ever won the Nobel Prize twice, once for chemistry. It was either chemistry or physics. I can't remember which one. I think it was chemistry. Anyway, it was chemistry or physics, and won as a peace prize for disarmament. And then Linus Pauling, in his brightness, in his dotage, thought vitamin C was the cure for the common cold. And as a result, a huge amount of research went into vitamin C as a cure for a common cold. It ends up, it doesn't cure the common cold. Then he said vitamin C will get rid of cholesterol and heart disease. It doesn't get rid of cholesterol and heart disease. Then he said vitamin C will actually work for osteoporosis. It doesn't work for osteoporosis. And it goes on and on and on and on and on. So, I mean, I got to tell you something. There's no good research that shows that vitamin C does anything unless you happen to be vitamin C deficient. Now, a macrobiotic diet, which was Ozawa, that was the guy who actually was saying the macrobiotic diet was good for you. And in the macrobiotic diet, there were children who were coming down with scurvy. We hadn't seen scurvy for 100 years, and that's because the macrobiotic diet has no vitamin C in it. Well, for people on the macrobiotic diet, they should take vitamin C. But on the whole, whether it's in a pill form, or in a liquid form, whether it's an intranasal form, or you inject it, I have never seen scientific research that vitamin C does any good except for scurvy. Now, there will be other people who I'm sure are going to write us on our Facebook page saying, no, Dr. Baxter, no, no. Vitamin C works for this, vitamin C works for that. You know something? If it feels good and it makes you feel good, no harm, no foul.
I grew up believing vitamin C was the cure-all.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And you grew up a long time ago. Let me tell you something. You grew up a long time. You grew up basically with black and white television with a tiny screen. You know.
moving right along. Before we take a break, Zorba, we always love hearing from the grammar police.
Oh, yes, I love it.
But here's a new one. This email came from a very specialized faction embedded deep within the grammar police, and they are taking aim at the disclaimer we read on every program. So this one is from the disclaimer police.
Disclaimer.
The following email came to us from a listener named Susan, who writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba and Tom, I'm not highly ranked member of the grammar police. That said, there's a recurring misuse of the language that drives me batty. It's from the disclaimer read at the end of every show. You say it is not intended as a diagnosis. I would rather hear it is not intended to provide a diagnosis. A show is not a diagnosis. It will never be a diagnosis." That's all you're going to give us?
One more.
Did we get something wrong on the show? Let us know. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at...
Facebook.
No. Zorba.
Oh, I'm sorry.
At WPR.org. I've got to help you with this.
I know.
More of your calls coming up. More of your emails. We'll be cooking up some tasty tofu bowls.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
All of that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. For our next call, Zorba, spicy eggplant and tofu bowls, it is recipe time.
I can just tell your mouth is watering from the way you said that. When I mean, it's not just the tofu, which we know is the high point, but it's the eggplant. I mean, it's like you and eggplant are inseparable. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you could have eggplant three times a day. Right?
I'm looking at this, and it's full of other ingredients
that are much
more. It's
going
to take us forever to do this tofu recipe.
Tofu. I mean, you said tofu like it's a negative thing. Tofu. 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 Do your mother, I mean, my mother never heard of tofu. I'm sure your mother never heard of tofu.
There wasn't tofu around.
It wasn't invented, right?
No,
tofu.
Right, right.
It wasn't invented. It's an ancient invention of another culture, but it certainly was an invention for White Bay. Is that where you grew up?
Those are the good old days.
White, you mean when they're the good old days? The good old days without tofu.
Right.
When we were meat and potatoes and hot dogs and burgers and brats. Forget all this tofu junk. So, but if you're unlike Tom and you like eggplant and you like tofu, you would like this recipe.
Okay.
So shall we go on with said recipe?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
But let's do it in a hurry.
Let's do it in a hurry so you can get back to your big bag, your bacon and eggs. Start out with, you like bacon and eggs, don't you?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, of course. that was a quick answer. You didn't even have to think about it because it was like, I like bacon and eggs. Do I? Yeah, a little tofu. tofu egg sales. Well, anyway.
We don't have time for the recipe.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Let's move on. So, two Japanese eggplants.
Two Japanese eggplants.
Now, do you know what a Japanese eggplant
Not
looks like?
Not a clue.
Not a clue. For baby bok choy.
For baby bok choy. Now, what's that?
Now, do you... It's exactly what I... One package of extra firm or firm tofu drained. Four green onions chopped. You know that, right?
Four green onions chopped.
A shredded carrot. One shredded carrot. You know that.
A shredded carrot.
A tablespoon of minced garlic. You know what minced garlic is, right?
Big tea minced garlic.
Tablespoon. Yes. Two tablespoonfuls of vegetable oil, right?
Two big tea vegetable oil.
Vegetable. Any kind of veg you have. Three tablespoonfuls of soy sauce.
Two big tea. Three.
No, three.
Three.
That's right,
three. Three big tea soy sauce.
Some water. Three tablespoonfuls of water. Go ahead, just put that in.
Three big water.
I mean, you've always have water on hand, right? Yeah. It can be any kind of water. 2.5 tablespoonfuls of oyster sauce.
2.5 big tea oyster sauce.
Are you tired yet of reading these ingredients? A teaspoon of sriracha sauce.
I'm nodding my head. A little tea sriracha. What's sriracha sauce?
Excellent. It's the first time you asked a question in this entire thing. It's I call it rooster sauce. It's a hot sauce that is made. Where's sriracha sauce made?
Rochester?
No. Oh, Sir Rochester, you see? The boy is good as that. Quarter teaspoon of red pepper flakes. It's going to be hot.
Little tea, red pepper
Teaspoon
flakes.
Of sugar. One more teaspoon of sesame oil.
A teaspoon of sesame oil.
And nonstick spray.
Nonstick spray.
So for those of you who haven't written it down and you're in your car, let's make it. So cut the tofu block half on the long way. Place the two halves on a kitchen towel, another towel on top, and place something heavy on top of the towel and allow it to sit for about 15 minutes. Then cut the tops off the eggplant, then cut them half lengthwise. Cut those sections half again, then cut them into 2-inch pieces, set them aside. Cut the bottoms off the bok choy. That's very important. Rinse off the remaining stalks to remove any dirt because it sort of has loose dirt like you do when you have celery. Now, in a skillet over medium-high heat, spray it with nonstick spray. Cut the tofu into bite-sized cubes. Add it to the skillet. Cook for a few minutes on each side until the tofu is browned. Careful when you move it around so you don't actually break it apart. While the tofu is cooking, heat 2 tablespoonfuls of vegetable oil in another skillet or a wok over medium-high heat. Once the oil is smoking, remember if it's peanut oil, you're going to get it hotter. Add half the chopped green onions. Stir quickly. Add the eggplant pieces. Stir for a good 6 or 7 minutes. While the eggplant is cooking, mix the garlic, soy sauce, water, oyster sauce, sriracha, red pepper flakes, sugar, and sesame oil in a bowl. Set it aside. Add the bok choy to the wok with the eggplant. Stir it together for a minute. Pour the sauce mixture into the wok. Stir to combine. Bring to a simmer. Then reduce the heat and cook for another 2 minutes. Add the tofu to the wok. Stir to cook. Then serve and garnish with shredded carrots and green onions. And voila! You've got a spicy eggplant and tofu bowl. What do you think about that, Tom?
Guess how many listeners are going to be interested in putting that together.
I got to tell you something. I'm interested in putting it together. If you like to really make good, tasty stuff, it really is a good recipe. So let's go to the serious side of it. We're not going to send this out in the mail because none of us at the station remember how much a first-class stamp cost. That's what I just asked. And without looking it up online, how many of you listeners know what a first-class stamp cost? I'm not talking about a bout. I'm talking about if you went to the post office today. But since we're not going to buy a forever stamp, you're going to have to go to ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org to find this recipe and other recipes. Or, of course, you can find us through Facebook.
800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Idaho Falls, Idaho. Hi.
Hi. How you doing?
Yeah, how can we help?
Well, this is kind of a weird thing. I retired in 2004. I went to Costa Rica. And I found some scorpions in my house, and so I had it fogged. I had forgotten something, and I walked into the house, and it was just like walking in a cloud, of course.
Mm-hmm.
About a week later, I bought an empanada off the store lady was selling off the street. I put it in the microwave, opened the microwave, and something popped in the right nostril.
Huh.
And I tasted the empanada, and it tasted like dirty socks. It was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, since then, I've had trouble since 2004 with it. And just recently, it's scabbed inside, and I went to ear, nose, and throat, and they gave me some ointment to put on it. But it still has a slight scab on it, and this has been since about 2004.
Wow, you've had this for a long, long time. So,
yeah.
A change in smell? Do you have a change in smell?
Or yes.
Is this...
mm-hmm. I couldn't smell anymore.
Oh, so you can't smell anymore now?
Not if I try to smell a rose or anything like mm-hmm. that, I can't smell it.
Mm-hmm. How about the taste of food? Do you taste your food?
Yeah, I can taste like mm-hmm. dark chocolate, mm-hmm. Certain things. Uh-huh. Yeah, I can taste.
Uh-huh. So certain things.
But uh-huh. I just thought, is it caused by maybe a mold or something?
Well, we have to figure out how to treat it. Who knows? I mean, you go through
right.
that stuff, you smell it. I remember the smell of DDT when I was a kid. Do you remember that time?
Yeah, no. I remember that. Yeah.
They used to fog places, and we used to run in DDT. And at the University of Wisconsin, they would have movies outside. And before they'd have movies, they'd fog the back of the Union with DDT.
Right. I'm part of the time in Madison, yeah.
Oh, so, you know, I mean, you know, there's that.
I know that, yeah.
That whole stuff like that. So when they gave you an ointment, did they give you mupirocin? Was that the name of the ointment?
Yes, I think that's uh-huh. what it was.
And how often did you start putting it in your nose?
Yeah, I put it in every day.
Mm-hmm. And you still do that?
No, I haven't done that. They were going to stick this plastic thing or something up my nose mm-hmm. and under my eye, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden it wasn't as bad as they thought, so they didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I still have that scab inside.
So let's talk about the scab. First of all, how long did you use that mupirocin, the ointment?
Gee.
A long time, a short time?
Quite a long time, yeah, for... months, I think.
For
yeah.
Months. Okay. And have you used a steroid nasal spray at all, over the counter Flonase, Flovent, or prescription? These are steroids that we often get for allergies. Have you used that at all?
I haven't tried that.
Okay. So I've got a couple. And have you used a neti pot?
Not very much.
Okay.
Though, but,
okay. I've got
one of those machines, you know, mm-hmm. those that they advertise on TV.
Uh-huh.
Puts water in one nostril and comes out the other.
Oh, okay. So have you used mm-hmm. that at all with saline?
I was using it, and then finally I used this just like mm-hmm. a spray up mm-hmm. my nose for moisture.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay.
And I've been doing that.
Okay. So I have a couple of suggestions. First of all, there's something chronic going on that you want to get rid of the inflammation. So you may look at a multi-pronged approach. In other words, if you want to get rid of this thing throughout, that you may have to do several different things to do. So number one, the mupirocin is really good. There are a lot of people who have chronic infections, a chronic staph infection of the nose. The staph infection colonizes the nose, and it doesn't go away. It stays there forever. So this may stay there forever. In other words, I mean, it's been there since 2004. But what you want to do is you want to try to get it under control. So the mupirocin ointment twice a day, once in the ointment, last thing before you go to sleep at night, can be very, very useful. Number one. Number two, I would recommend you use a steroid spray during the day, Flonase, which is now over-the-counter, fluticasone. It's a nasal spray. You can also get it by prescription. It may be cheaper by prescription through your ENT doc or your family doc. I would also use that once a day to get rid of any inflammation that's there. So I would use that once a day, and I would also use either a neti pot or the automatic neti pot that you're using once a day too. In other words, I would do everything. I would do the neti pot or the device you have that's a neti pot. I would use a nasal spray. I would not do it at the same time, but I would also use the mupirocin ointment in the morning and in the evening. So you're going to basically be doing things full force, and I would do that for a minimum of 2 months and see what happens. Now, at 2 months, if you go, you know, this thing doesn't bother me anymore. I feel a little scab, but it doesn't bother me. I feel like I can smell better, but I'm doing it. You may just have to continue something like that for the rest of your life. Ointment twice a day, nasal spray.
Well,
you're limited. If you're old, the rest of your life doesn't mean that many years because you're going to die soon. That's it.
Well, good luck.
Do all of that. Do all of that.
It's really great to talk to you.
Yeah, and thank you very much. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it.
You betcha. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413.
And you know, we know that he lived in Wisconsin because he said, you betcha.
Very good.
Just like I know when somebody calls me and they're from the South, they always put at the end of the thing, they'll say, blah, 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 sir. They always put sir at the end. Then I know they're from south of the Mason-Dixon line, or they're in the military where they call me sir.
Very interesting. We have a voicemail now, Zorba, from Oak Creek, Wisconsin.
If you're starting to get consistent acid reflux or indigestion, what you can do for it, and is that a sign of some other concerns? Thank you.
So acid reflux, two basic kinds of medication, H2 blockers such as Zantac, which now does not have ranitidine, has a different medication for famotidine. So H2 blockers work really well, taking once or twice a day. And something called PPIs, Prilosec being one that's over-the-counter without a prescription. And both of those together individually can really work for acid reflux. Try one, if not try the other. I put people on the PPIs first because they are more effective. There can be more side effects from them. Read the label, decide which one you want to take, and that's the treatment. They work well over 90% of the time. They work well. For other people, they have to elevate their bed at night. It's very important because they elevate their bed on blocks or make sure that they sleep a little bit higher so the acid goes down in their stomach and doesn't go up towards their mouth when they're lying flat in bed. For some people, that is really effective and important.
Now, Zorba, before the break, let's do that segment where we give one of your naysayers some airtime. This is Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
The following email came to us from Richard in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Dear Dr. Pastor, on a recent program, you spoke about the labeling of products that say no trans fats. That isn't quite accurate. The actual labeling might not be false, but it is deceptive.
Mm-hmm.
No means none at all. But what they actually say is something like 0 grams trans fat per serving, which could be rounding of 0.4 gram.
Oh,
and
correct.
Even that is
right.
A dangerous
right.
level.
Mm-hmm.
If they said per package, that would be more meaningful, because if you multiply the 0.4 by 6 servings, that
whatever
would be
servings
a bigger number
right.
that doesn't round right. to zero. The FDA should require labeling to tenths of a gram. That would accurately inform the consumer and, more importantly, encourage the food companies to cut back even more on trans fats. Thank you and Tom for your informative and entertaining program.
Well, let's do a plus. Well, first of all, it's in some ways it's splitting hairs, and in some ways it's not. So labeling, when the feds recommend labeling, it is a big deal with food companies. Big deal. I mean, if you look at it, it's like potato chips. How many in a serving? Like 20 chips. I mean, what a ridiculous thing. I mean, it should be whole bag, half bag, quarter bag. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless they're single servings bags. And there's a tremendous amount of back and forth. And you know who's in charge. It's the companies, you know, that manufacture the food. You know, they're the ones, their lobbyists go in and say, no, you got to make it this way. We've got to make this bold. So He's right in that it's zeroed down, but there's minimal trans fats in the stuff that you're eating, you know, that you have. When it says zero, it's right. It might have 0.4. That is correct. And any trans fats are not good trans fats. On the other hand, I think it's these tiny amounts are the issue. The issue is the foods that have trans fats generally are baked goods and other goods that are manufactured. So he's right at one level. It's splitting hairs on another level. But when it comes to food labeling, he is right on the ball. The feds could label things so it's easier to understand. And I think part of the issue is that there are too many hands in the pot. There's money in the pot. And that's why we don't get labeling that is clear and easy to understand as a consumer. And I can tell you this because I'll look at something and it'll say 150 calories per serving. And then the package of rice says, 4 servings. And I'm thinking, what's a serving of this? Well, it's like a cup of rice. Well, who eats a cup of rice? You end up eating 2 cups of rice. So it's a big deal, and it's more of a deal than anyone really even thinks about. This person was right on.
Really interesting. Do you disagree with the good doc? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, another interesting topic to talk about, and more listener emails as well. All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, 800-462-7413. Before our next call, Zorba, new pig research may change what we know about organ transplants.
Yeah, so it's really interesting, provocative early study research. So what they did is they looked at pigs that had died. Okay, so these are pigs, you know, that had died in a lab. I mean, they were put to sleep, as you might say, but they were killed in the lab. Hours later, they then started pumping synthetic fluids, which were fluids that were very similar to blood-type fluids, in the pigs. And then they observed the heart was beginning to pump faintly. And eventually, they restored blood circulation, and they restored some cellular function in vital organs such as the heart and the liver. So in other words, after death, after the death of this animal, they were able to look at this. This was in the journal Nature, by the way, which is a peer-reviewed journal, one of the premier journals in the country. And it's really important for organ transplantation because there's some thorny issues around that of when do you die? I mean, that's a big issue with organ transplantation. You know, a person is dead, their head is dead, and then we take out the heart or we take out the kidney, we take out that. But also, the other issue is when can you actually, if a person has died, we'll say in the emergency room, they've died and their heart has died, not in front of you, when can you actually restart the heart or other organs from going? And very, very important. So they took another group of pigs. They were put on something, ECMO, which is a life support system that oxygenates the blood outside of the heart. They were on there for about 6 hours. Capable of delivering adequate areas of oxygen, basically, to the body. And certain functions were then restored there. So this is sort of basic science research on the horizon to look at organ transplantation. But it's another issue that brings up an ethical issue of when do you die? So this is interesting stuff because it looks like we may be able to revive organs after they're dead. Well, what does it mean? Were they actually dead? You see what I mean?
Yeah, curious.
Well, it's curious, and it raises some thorny ethical issues. But right now, the real issue is it appears that we may be able to restart some organs after it appears, certainly in the pig model, after the pig is dead. And this may help restore organs for people, we'll say, who are doing CPR and organs have died. And it may be that if we put a different solution into the body, we can then begin to restore cellular function. And so on the horizon, this may be very important research.
Are we using this yet, or is it just...
No. This is really very... This is basic science research in a very early study. That's really what we're looking at. We're looking at other ways to basically bring organs back to life.
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my question today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, how can we help?
I have extremely low ferritin levels, and this was discovered about 8-9 months ago. I've been doing some fertility stuff, and with all the testing, they found that my ferritin has been super low. So they put me on iron supplements for several months and have been retesting every month and a half, 2 months, and it's not improving.
Mm-hmm.
My hemoglobin and my hematocrit are normal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a healthy, you know, middle-aged woman mm-hmm. otherwise, and they don't know what could be going on.
So why are they worried about low ferritin levels?
So, like I said, I've been doing fertility testing and mm-hmm. upcoming IVF, and they're worried that if my iron is too low,
mm-hmm.
that could... lead to other risk factors with pregnancy.
Got you. Have you gone to a hematologist?
I have not. That was my next
question.
Does it merit seeing a hematologist?
That's what I would do. If you've got a normal blood count and a low ferritin level, there are a variety of things. There are a whole list of things that can be responsible, and it may or may not have any meaning. In other words, you can have a change in ferritin levels and have normal red count, in which case the low ferritin, we don't screen for low ferritin levels. We don't do anything about it in normal practice. In other words, we don't go, oh, your ferritin level is low, you have to have this. It's not a screening test for anything, but it may be something that's important in IVF. I'm not an authority by any means in IVF, but I would say the only way to put this to sleep as to whether or not it has any issue is to definitely see a hematologist, especially if you're going through IVF.
So one other question, too. They sure. recommended also IV infusion iron, and so that's an order that they've already put in, and I'm like,
I'll tell you something. An IV, once again, this is the IVF issue. If they feel that an IV infusion of iron is going to settle it to be able to move on to the IVF, that's okay. It may be that you're not absorbing iron from the oral iron you're taking, and an IV infusion can do that. So I would not be against that. And also I would get that moving forward. So I would, if they put an order in for the IV infusion and they feel like that'll solve the problem, I would do that. But if your serum ferritin is not back to normal at all after that, or if your serum ferritin then goes to an abnormal number, then I would go see hematology. So given that information, I would do the IV infusion. They do it well. It's, you know, if they order it and if it's covered by insurance, it's very expensive. I would definitely do that. Because once again, they know what they're doing when they're doing IVF. Have you done IVF more than once so far or not?
Once about a year ago, mm-hmm. and they didn't even do this level of testing, mm-hmm. and there was no discovery of my low ferritin.
Right. Well, and once again, I don't know what factor a hematologist and an IVF person putting their heads together is going to say what factor this is, but I would definitely do the IV infusion of iron. There's no doubt in my mind I would do that.
Okay, perfect. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And good luck to you.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that call. Thank you very much. 800-462-7413.
You know, IVF is a very, very expensive procedure. They look at a whole variety of different chemistries to try to make sure that everything is online so that a woman can get pregnant. And so it's very important to go through all of those stepwise procedures. And then if there's something abnormal, to get another opinion from somebody such as a hematologist as this so that you can move forward to try to get the procedure to work.
Okay, Zorba, let's pry open the old inbox and take a listener email. The following question came from Tara, who listens to the show on KPBX in Spokane, Washington. Tara writes, "Hello, Dr. Zorba. I work from home on the days your show airs, and I always set an alarm so I don't miss it. My question is about the role of red wine in the Mediterranean diet. I've been working on transitioning to this diet, and it's going well. The only problem is the red wine part.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to enjoy a little wine, but for me, alcohol tends to cause an irregular heartbeat, restless legs, and poor sleep. For these reasons, I don't drink any alcohol. What I'm wondering is what the smallest amount of red wine a person can have and still reap the heart healthy benefits? And can grape juice or non-alcoholic wine have similar effects?"
Well, I don't think you need to have red wine for the Mediterranean diet. There may be some advantage to having that. But for some people, they don't tolerate it. They don't want to get the buzz from it, or they're alcoholics. And by no means do you have to, by any means, have wine to be really following the Mediterranean diet. Now, for a while, we thought maybe grape juice would do it, or resveratrol tablets would also do it, which was sort of a derivation of red wine. But the answer is no. You don't have to do it. Follow the Mediterranean diet. It's really the king and queen of dietary therapy, and you don't need alcohol at all, especially if you don't tolerate it.
Do you feel like asking the good doc a healthy living question? Why not? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
zorbawpr.org.
800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. Now, let's hear a voicemail from a listener in Pittsburgh, Kansas.
Yeah, good morning. You mentioned Herbert Hoover's chicken in every pot. It wasn't a chicken in every pot. It was a car in every garage and two chickens in every pot.
Well, that's pretty interesting, especially since most people didn't have garages in those days and it was really hard to get chicken because it was expensive. Well, thank you for updating us.
And Zorba, we actually did some research on this quote, and here's some clarification.
Oh, okay.
Chicken in every pot is a quotation that is most often associated with Herbert Hoover. However, the phrase has its origins in 17th century France. Henry IV wished that each of his peasants would enjoy a chicken in his pot every Sunday. Although Hoover never uttered the phrase, the Republican Party did use it in a 1928 campaign advertisement, touting a period of Republican prosperity.
A chicken in every pot.
That had provided a chicken in every pot. And a car in every backyard to boot.
Every backyard. See, not in a garage. A chicken in every pot, a car in every backyard. Boy, that would be really something. Have a car in the backyard, you got to go around there. But, hey, a chicken in every pot. That's it. I like it.
It's good.
Really, one of those Henrys? Henry IV? How about Henry VIII? Did he really care about his people and chickens?
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. And before we call it a day, Zorba, let's do the segment where we feature what our wonderful listeners are writing on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page. This is called Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback.
Okay, Zorba. First up is Bruce in Madison, Wisconsin, who wrote, I've listened to your radio show for years, but I don't believe I've heard you talk about peripheral neuropathy and any possible treatments. I'm a 73-year-old male in very good health, but I was diagnosed with idiopathic peripheral neuropathy about 6 years ago. The neurologists I've seen don't seem to have much to offer to alleviate the symptoms, numbness in feet and toes. Just wondering what your thoughts are.
Oh, it's a complex problem that we have talked about it. So peripheral neuropathy, where you don't have the usual sensations, can be from B12 deficiency, a number of other deficiencies within there. Diabetes is actually probably the most common thing. We don't have a good treatment, but idiopathic peripheral neuropathy, which means we don't know what's caused by, is a big issue and is a big problem. And we actually have discussed that. We have people who have called up for it. And sometimes there's no effective treatment. Sometimes the drug gabapentin, pregabalin can work, but there's no clear answer, and for some, there is no clear cause.
And finally, Suzanne in Stoughton, Wisconsin, wrote the following, Zorba, thank you for a well-reasoned, practical response to the question about cannabis and dementia. The misinformation about potentially therapeutically beneficial drugs like cannabis is disheartening. Obvious interference from big pharmaceutical companies whose objectives are selling product for life, not healing or easing suffering. And the analogy of cannabis to real, terribly destructive drugs like heroin and others is dangerous and disposable.
Well, first of all, I don't think Big Pharma is behind not doing cannabis research. I think it's a Fed issue, and they have to take it away and say cannabis and heroin are the same thing. That is a dumb, stupid thing for them to do. Put it down as, put it in the same realm as alcohol, and then we can do research on it and find out if it does any good for dementia. And from a point of view of Big Pharma trying to find something that you can take to prevent dementia, I'm for it if they can find something, but the reality is nothing is really worked for dementia that we have actually found. And there may not be anything to work for dementia, or there may be something that's out there. So the reality is we need research on every possibility for dementia because it's a big problem in our society. So thank you, though, for bringing up the point that we need more research on cannabis, and it's in the lap of the feds.
Yeah. Thanks to our wonderful listeners for all the Facebook comments. And, of course, you can always send us an old-fashioned email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show, or you just want to stream the show online anytime,
visit us on the web at ZorbaPastor.org, or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime.
Anytime.
To leave your question at...
Oh, God, that's, I don't have it. 1-800, that's it.
462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with
your doctor or somebody else.
Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Colberg.
Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran.
For Zorba Pastor, I'm...
I don't know who I am.
I'm Tom Clark.
I'm Zorba Pastor.
Asking you to join us on the next
Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, And you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's zorbapastor.org.
From PRX.